into your life, it will creep. It starts when you're always afraid. Step out of line, the man come and take you away. We better stop. Hey, what's that sound? Everybody look what's going on.
Yo, peoples of the earth, this is Killer Cereals Podcast with Tony Jones.
And Ryan Parker.
And you know what? We are bringing the future.
We're bringing the future. We don't build a garden. I'm not a gardener. I'm a future bringer.
We bring the future.
Which also means I'm an ignorant.
You are that, but that's, yeah. We are talking about The Path, Episode 5. It's on Hulu.
About midway through the season, right?
They're releasing an episode every Wednesday night. And our thanks to Hulu for giving us some little bit of private access. So we have a little bit of chance to watch it in advance and get our podcast thoughts together so that we can release the drop this thing the morning after. And we're even working on some things behind the scenes to maybe get some people from the show onto the podcast in future episodes. But today we're today we're focusing on episode 5, and we've got some subplot stuff going on, and the major plot point revolves around Hawk, the 15-and-a-half-year-old son of the main couple, Eddie and Sarah. But before we get to that, let's talk about some of the subplots, and then we'll
You love the subplots, man.
We'll circle back to Hawk. I really do like the subplot of this FBI agent because I think it's well acted. It's also like, it's interesting because he's a person of color, which I find is an interesting casting choice. So you got in a very pretty white religious setting, this African-American guy is an undercover FBI agent. He's coming in. And he comes in firstly to save this girl, Mary, who got rescued after the tornado. But now he's got some doubts about the backstory of Mary's father. And now he just seems to be investigating the Myrist movement on his own. And we see him also dealing with a daughter who's got, looks like an infant daughter who's
got an illness.
A chronic illness that he's dealing with.
Yeah. So, and it's interesting because his where it feels different is that most shows would have him just bring down the cult, so to speak. But you're hitting on the point where he has this personal trauma that needs working out. And it might be more, he thinks maybe in this episode, it feels like he thinks Mary might be better off. He has that great line with her father, right? You know, you'll be the first to know when I figure out what I'm going to do.
Yeah, exactly.
Because essentially, I'm going to beat your ass, maybe, you know?
Yeah. Like once I figure
just
out
like Cal did.
Selling your daughter since she was 11 as a prostitute, I'm going to throw you in jail for good.
And his daughter's 6, so there's that little connection there. But it will be interesting to see where this ultimately goes with him.
Well, another interesting component I thought that's so fascinating, we'll have to circle back to Eddie later in the podcast here, but he's at a diner with Eddie, and Eddie's kind of like, in traditional Christian parlance, you would say Eddie is like his discipler, you know, like Eddie is sitting with him, and you're almost ready for Eddie to write on a napkin, there's a chasm, and on one side of the chasm is God, and on the other side is, you know, like, it's like that, like he's going to write it on the back of the,
or he's going to pull out the track,
the paper placemat at the diner and be like, let me explain to you the train,
the sinner's prayer,
the train of salvation, you know, faith.
But fast. He doesn't.
No, that's what's so fascinating. He doesn't because this guy kind of crosses the line from being undercover FBI agent to actually tells Eddie a true part of his life and says, I got this sick kid. And Eddie's response is like, well, we're not, you know, like no miracle is going to make your daughter better. But
your kid, you can get on the ladder, but your kid's still going to be sick.
Yeah, like I'm not offering you a miracle.
And I think that puts I think that tweaks a bit of that agent's expectation, because he's saying, you know, we're not selling anything. You know, we're not promising anything instantaneous.
And all I could think was, what would Sarah say if she were sitting there? Sarah would say,
completely different.
Light will heal your daughter.
Yeah.
Don't you think?
Yeah. Well, you've got me. You're going to lead into another point. So I don't know if you want to say more about this character and that subplot, or if you want to jump to Sarah, because I think we see more about her in this episode through her relationship with Han.
I want to come back to Sarah, but that's the first thing I thought of. Like, what if this were Cal, or what if this were Sarah sitting at this diner with this FBI agent undercover?
Well, I think they're saying something completely different.
And Eddie's like, I'm not going to promise to heal your daughter. I'm just going to tell you, if you want to start on 1R on the first rung of the ladder, like, it's going to bring comfort to you, but it's not going to heal your daughter. Yeah. You know, so yeah, so
we'll, scene.
It just shows another kind of in the unfolding of Eddie's consciousness around this religion. There's another subplot that involves Mary, and she finally consummates her relationship with her boyfriend,
Sean,
and then she goes to Cal for his approval, and kind of like, she's so proud. She really wants his approval that she slept with her boyfriend, and Cal's on the phone trying to solve a crisis in the.
And she completely misreads the situation.
And he's like, get the hell out of here. I don't really care. Congratulations, you slept with your boyfriend. Like, big freaking deal.
And so, she's misreading the situation all along, right? She's seeing the movement in Cal. And so any sort of negative feedback from him is just going to crush her.
Yeah, it's interesting. And she seems to get over it then, because she's packing to leave after that experience. But Sean convinces her to stay. And then the next thing you see is they're washing dishes together. And I mean, I'm not a big fan of this subplot with Mary. I don't find it that compelling or believable.
It's a tragic backstory, but it feels like it's just a weaker component of the contemporary setting, you know, in the story.
Yeah, for me. Now, I know it's tied in with other subplots.
But what I think, when you bring it up with her interaction with Cal, I think it is another window into the ways in which I think Cal is maybe losing a little bit of his grip on the community, certainly on his position as the leader, you know, because people are starting to look to him. It's becoming the cult of his personality, or at least that's what he's starting to think, and he's starting to butt heads with the elders, you know, might be a way to put it, the founders. He's losing Sarah, who's completely undermined his authority. His conversation with Eddie, because he's Eddie's guide on the ladder, but Eddie, you know, at the end we see Eddie thinks Cal's more of a bureaucrat than a spiritual leader. So even these smaller characters like Mary are giving way to some understandings of how religious leaders function, fail, or otherwise, you know?
Yeah, I think that's right. And I she does serve a purpose to kind of show Cal, on the one hand, not being very emotionally engaged, even in this woman who obviously has a huge crush on him. And you know, he's had a sexual encounter with her, a couple of them actually, in the past. Yeah. And so it'll be, and of course, as we've already talked about, Mary's father is also woven in. So the subplots all weave together, and Mary may end up being an indispensable figure, but just that one aspect
at the moment,
like, her making out with her boyfriend. And they're also like really loud kissers, which I think is like, that's like, nobody kisses like that. So now let's flip over to the final subplot to talk about this week, and that's Cal and this, you know, wealthy family. So you just already made one point that's so important, and that's Cal has been undermined from above and below. So last week, Cal was undermined from above when two of the founders come back from San Diego to the upstate New York place, and they're basically like, yeah, this is where the garden's going to be. Like, look how beautiful this is. This is going to be the garden, which is their like eschatological promise, is that they're building a garden, and then you know, when the world is destroyed, that they're going to be able to live in the garden.
They're going to live there, yeah.
And yet they come in and they're basically like saying, Cal, no, you know, we don't think you're ready for this. You're not going to be in charge of the garden. And now this week we've got Sarah. Well, we knew it happened last week, but it was just revealed to Cal this week that Sarah had undermined him from below because he's 10R and she's 8R, and that she has defied his order and taken a mom and a son, who's the drug addict. The Ridge
family, yeah.
Yeah, the Ridges, and sent them to Cusco to Silas, the third founder. There are four living founders, it seems, as well. You know, one of them is Dr. Stephen Meyer, who's in a coma, but three who are active, this couple from San Diego and Silas. She sends them down to Silas to take the medicine. Cal discovers this and freaks out.
And I just love the notion of Sarah thinks it's a good idea. Let's give drugs to the drug addict.
Yeah, you know? Totally.
That's going to work.
We're going to circle back to this, but Sarah is a true believer. Like, Sarah does not have a shred of doubt.
And Michelle Monaghan kills it as that character. She's great. Yeah.
So yeah. Cal has this total freak out when he finds this out. Screams,
he goes to the Ridges. Ball.
But wait, before he does that, there's this very interesting thing where he's alone in his office. After Mary leaves, he tries to make a flight to Cusco. He screams at the person on the other end. First of all, I'm like, nobody calls to make flight arrangements on the phone. But, but I mean, it's TV. Like, it wouldn't be very good TV if he's like Googling.
Pounding away
like,
on the keyboard.
Like, he's like on Kaya. He's on Priceline, like screaming at Priceline. Yeah. But then he does this like breathing exercise and calms himself down. And I think we have this interesting moment where he does show that he is still a spiritual person, and then he kind of uses this breathing exercise we've seen before to calm down his rage, which I thought
that's a good point. Yeah,
and then once he's in control of himself, he goes and confronts Sarah. Eddie tells him, get off my porch, you don't get to talk to my wife like this. This is after Eddie's had a vision during his 7R training of Cal and his wife Sarah making out,
yeah.
And then Cal
goes to the
Rich's house and basically stands up for himself, gets the absolute shit beat out of him by Mr. Ridge's bodyguard, and then in such a compelling moment, and I know you, I know because you texted me right after you watched this. The episode ends with Cal sitting in his car, absolutely beaten to a pulp, and he's just the slightest hint of a smile. Yeah. And I want to know from you, what do you think he's smiling about, having been beaten like that?
I don't know. I unless it's either something he's going to hold over the Ridge family, or something that he's going to use as kind of this martyr, moment of martyrdom with the rest of his community.
I wonder too if, you know, he beat Mary's dad up that badly, and I wonder if he thought now the kind of scales of the universal justice are back in order because I beat somebody up and now somebody.
Yeah, that's another good point. Yeah.
Or if it's I'm going to use this against Ridge, or if it's or if he's some kind of masochist actually, and he gets some kind of perverse pleasure from being hit and abused. You know, he grew up in an alcoholic home. Yeah, he grew up in an alcoholic home. I wonder what it is that maybe he feels like he's victorious because he stood up to Mr. Ridge and
took it.
Yeah, he took it, right? And it's not going to break his spirit.
Yeah. Well, it'll be interesting to see how he adapts to that beatdown next week. But I think we got to get to the Hawk story, which is the main storyline in this episode. So, of course, at the end of last episode, he runs off, goes to the party, and starts making out with his girlfriend. I think it's Ashley.
Yeah.
And this, the start of this episode is, of course, he falls asleep at the party. Nothing happens really. But his parents, Sarah wakes up and she can't find him and she freaks out. So he gets back to the house and they learn, you know, he confesses fairly straight away.
Yep.
And expresses the tension that he's having, the doubts he's having all of a sudden about wanting to leave school. Now he doesn't want to leave school. And, you know, they send him to his room and Eddie and Sarah have a conversation about how to parent Hawk that I think is very revealing about not just the movement, but about faith in general. And Eddie says, let's let him cool off. Let's let him stew. I've been there before. You know, he's just testing the boundaries. This is normal adolescent teenage behavior. Sarah immediately flips out and thinks, I've lost him. I'm going to lose him. I can't imagine being in the garden without him.
Yep. Just because she's, like what?
Because something just happened like with a family member. Yeah.
Her sister obviously left the movement. And now I think what's going to be revealed down the road is they talked initially like, her sister was still alive, but I mean, was dead, but I think we're going to find out that her sister is still alive. Of course, she's dead to them spiritually because she's left the movement and chosen to be an ignorant.
That'll be really interesting.
But and so she won't be with them in the garden for eternity. Here's the thing, Ryan. Here's the thing I'm struggling with, okay? And it's that I know there are people who are true believers, like Sarah is a true believer, because you can see it. Like Eddie wants to call bullshit on her and go, Eddie wants to say, Sarah, he's a 15-year-old boy. He's got hormones. Like, we can't hold him back. Even the Amish get
this. It's not the end of the earth.
We've talked about this before, like the room spring. Even Amish understand they got to let their adolescence free for a year, and then they got to decide whether to come back into the community or not. But Sarah at this point is a little bit one-dimensional to me, or becoming that way, because she's such a true believer. And you think, I just want to like shake her by the shoulders and go, are you, you know, like, and Eddie tries to even say the closer we hang on to him, the further he's going to push.
You're going to drive him away. Yeah. And I really think there's something about this relationship between Eddie, Sarah, and Hawk that is really interesting. And I really appreciate it when shows are doing kind of more three-dimensional teenage characters, right?
Yeah.
Who feel realistic. And Hawk does. I mean, if you've worked in youth groups, if you're parents and you have teenagers, he feels like a kind of an authentic, believable teenager, and I think he's cast so well. And but there's something about Hawk's struggle with the community and certainly this new part of his life that I think starts to point at these notions of wisdom and maturity, where Eddie, you know, when you're a teenager, you can't see past your own nose, right? Like, right. It's and part of growing up and being more mature is being able to practice empathy and to see the larger world around you and realize, hey, this isn't all about me. But there's something about that in faith communities too. You know, I was saying to you earlier that at least the people that I've spoken with in my life, and it seems to me the wisest Christians that I know don't feel compelled to convert other people. That they're able to engage in interreligious dialogue peacefully and thoughtfully without sacrificing their own commitments, but without feeling the need to belittle or convert their conversation partner. And I think there's a maturity to that that kind of parallels, I think, the way that we grow as teenagers and young adults, that you know, we're not constantly fighting with our parents. We don't think we know everything politically. And Eddie has the ability to do that a little bit. As you said with Hawk, let's just let him go a little bit.
Yeah.
Let's let him test these boundaries. Sarah absolutely cannot do that because she cannot see past her own belief.
I hear you. And like, that's how I'm parenting my kids, more like Eddie, you know, like realizing kind of kids will be kids and you got to let kids, adolescents have to differentiate from their family of origin. That's the only way.
And if you're a pastor and you're leading a community, I mean, wouldn't you say You've got to let the people have their doubts. They've got to have the freedom and the space to question.
Here's the thing. It's been about 10 years ago now since the largest ever study of American teenage religiosity came out, the National Study of Youth and Religion. And, 3,000 survey results, telephone survey results, hundreds and hundreds of interviews, focus groups, and things like that. And what did they find? The kids who are most religious and most likely to maintain their religion from the transition from adolescence into adulthood was what? Number one, top of the list, Mormons. Wow. Then came evangelical Christians and Orthodox Jews. What's at the bottom of the list? Liberal mainline Protestants and Reformed Jews. The more conservative and restrictive the religious environment, the more likely the kid is to be able to articulate what they actually believe and then to maintain that belief into adulthood. So this
now, is that study taking into account people changing denominations or faith of it, that, or are they abandoning faith altogether? Or are they transitioning into communities that are different from what they were raised in, but still faith-based?
Very few transition. Most people, if they leave religion, if they leave their denomination or their faith, they leave religion altogether. Very few people convert from a conservative branch like Orthodox Judaism to Reform Judaism or evangelical Christianity to liberal Catholicism. That just very rarely happens, like statistically. It's mainly these more you think about
Mormons. So you're thinking Sarah's got to lock it down.
Well, I'm just saying what Sarah's doing, actually, she's not wrong. Like, what she's doing has a better chance of success than what Eddie's doing, and that is, let's pull this kid out of school and homeschool him before 16, and let's keep him completely indoctrinated. Because look around at the other adolescents who are in the community. Right. And they are like true believers.
They've full bore,
the
man.
Kool-Aid, man. They're like narking out Hawk. Meanwhile, I think Sarah is going to start. She's already done it a little bit in this episode, but I think she's really going to start because we find out at the end, of course, Hawk lies to his parents, says, I want to plant trees to make my amends or whatever it's called for what I did wrong. Like, I'm back in. I broke up with a girl. And then
resetting, or whatever he called it.
And then he sneaks out and he meets.
Yeah. So they're both, neither approach is immediately effective for Hawk because he has them both fooled. And the episode ends, he's sitting in the back of the pickup with this girlfriend of his.
And guess what? Sarah is going to blame this on Eddie. And here's what I think is going to happen. And Cal is going to say to Sarah, if you would have married me, a true believer,
well, this is good. Yeah.
A 10R instead of Eddie. And God only knows what Eddie was when Sarah and Eddie got married. You know, he's a 7R right now. Maybe he was a 2R or 3R.
So,
you know what I'm saying? Because
she
said in the first episode when she and Cal were walking down the road, and he was like, you know, basically, you could have married me. And she's like, I kind of wanted to marry the wild child. I knew what I was getting into. And now I think those chickens are going to come home to roost.
So right before the last scene where Hawk is with his girlfriend in the truck, there's a scene of Eddie and Sarah having sex. And as that scene progressed, it felt to me like either the end of something or the beginning of something.
Yeah.
Or maybe both. Like this, that I don't know if it was the way it was shot, the way they played it, but it didn't feel like, you know, connect, you know, they talk about connecting. There's a couple episodes ago where they talk about, oh, we need to connect. And it did not feel like that in this episode. And so it's going to be interesting to see moving forward if, you know, the relationship sticks together or if it's going to follow a path that you're talking about.
Well,
so,
I did ask, I watched it with my wife and I'm like, cause they were like arguing over this. And she said, she said to Eddie, Sarah says to Eddie, Hawk broke up with her. And then that's their turn on and they start making out and go to bed together. I'm like, That's a weird kind of foreplay. Very like, weird. Hey, our yeah. son dumped his girlfriend.
Yes.
Okay. So, go ahead.
I don't know. Do we have time for another topic, or do we want to tease out some conversation points for? I'm going to leave that up to you, Tony.
Yeah. Either way, man. I think I did want to say that what's the David Bowie song that plays in that episode? Because, man, it is a great song, and they're like cutting between it's Eddie and Sarah making out, Cal is getting beat up, you know.
I'll look that up and put it in the podcast description.
They're cutting this out back and forth, and I thought they're playing this song. It's a really long song. It goes on for like 6 minutes. And I thought, wow, that's it. I just, and maybe it's because, and we can ask, hopefully we'll get to talk to the showrunner, but Jessica, but it's like, it's pretty amazing. And maybe it's because it's on Hulu, but they do get to take some chances that they would not get to take if they were on network TV. Like, obviously dropping the F-bomb and like playing a 6 minute long song during during these scenes and stuff like that.
Well, there's a couple other things that are lingering that we can talk about next week. Because it's also been a running theme throughout each episode that we haven't really addressed at length here on the podcast, but this notion of the future and the ways in which members of the community talk about the future. You know, we joked about you're building a garden or you're bringing the future. Mm-hmm. Who's going to be in it? Is the garden on Earth or is it in some other realm? Mm-hmm. You know? And I think the episode today begins to kind of get at that. Who are we going to be with in the garden, and the fear of missing our loved ones? You know, Hawk, there's a notion in this episode that Hawk is a miracle baby. Mm-hmm, you know, we didn't really talk about that.
That's great.
So we can come back to that, because this storyline certainly isn't over. So it'll be interesting to see. And again, how do we think about the future? They talk about it almost as if it's a person who is going to arrive and just wreak havoc on the Earth, that they can somehow escape. And, you know, the kind of total destruction or kind of total depravity, so to speak, that they fear is going to be no respecter of any community. So it'll be interesting to see how they navigate that too, moving forward. But I think there's a lot there. There's still the show, I think, still keeps bringing in these new points while still building on those themes that we keep talking about each week. So we can get on that next week, unless there's just some huge bombshell that we have to pick apart the whole time, right?
Yeah. Well, I think we picked a good one. It sure is a fascinating show, and if in our last podcast. You know, we talked about the People versus OJ, our last series that we tackled. Sometimes we were like digging a little bit to find the spiritual, religious, theological themes. This show, it's like more than we can talk about. You know, we could talk for 2 hours about an hour long episode.
It's all here. And the great news is that now you can find us on iTunes as of today.
Yeah, baby.
So you go to iTunes, go to the store, go to podcasts, and search Killer Serials. You'll find the icon with our two ugly mugs on it, and all the episodes are there, from our walk through the People versus OJ, what will now be the first three episodes of The Path, or episodes devoted to The Path. So it would mean a lot to us, and it'd be a huge help to us if you go and subscribe. Again, that's on iTunes under Podcasts Killer Serials. And
please, like, if you listen to the show and you're interested in conversation about it, tweet at us with hashtag Killer Serials. Do that same thing on Facebook.
Yeah, and your Twitter handle is
Jones Tony,
and I'm J Ryan Parker. So you can let us know that way, and we'll get a Twitter account going for the show as well. You can follow it there and raise any questions or comments too. So we'll build that out over the week and have it ready for the next episode too. So.
All right. Thanks for listening to Killer Serials.
Thanks, everybody.
Yeah, we'll see you next week for The Path, Episode 6.
Eddie, when you came to us, what did you find?
Home. I was following the eye. future is coming. Poverty, political instability, terrorism. Everything we know will collapse.
I don't want to live for this moment. I want to live forever in the garden that we are creating here together.
What happened on your retreat?
What do you mean?
You've been acting distant since you got back.
You need to know you are everything to me.
Looking into the Myers movement.
I'm putting them on cold watch.
How about you tell me something so I know that this isn't a trap?
We don't hurt people.
You sure about that?
We who follow this path, we struggle with our relationship with the outside world. If darkness falls,
we are light.
You're not gonna blow up my life because of something I don't even know, but I really saw.
You are nothing! You are nobody!
We're telling you to move to the side.
I can walk out on the street and make people believe.
With scarves of red tied round their throats to keep their little heads from falling in the snow. And I turn round and there you go. And Michael, you would fall and turn the white snow red as strawberries.